In February 2004, 1 year ago, Haiti's democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was ousted from political office. Forced by U.S. soldiers onto a military plane and into exile in South Africa. Aristide, last elected as president in 2000 as leader of Lavalas, which means flash flood in Haitian Creole, became a symbol of the Lavalas political movement, which swept Jean-Bertrand Aristide to the presidency first in 1990, with the support of approximately 80% of Haitians who live below the poverty level. 1 year after the elected Lavalas government was replaced with a U.S., Canadian, and French-appointed government, there are increasingly brutal human rights reports which outline a systematic war waged against political dissidents fighting for Haitian self-determination and against the U.S., Canadian, and French-appointed government. Human rights organizations such as the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti estimate that thousands have been killed in acts of violence by the Canadian RCMP-trained Haitian police force against protesters, organized workers, and grassroots groups. It is also estimated that currently there are 700 political prisoners which sit in Haitian jails. I had the opportunity to interview Kevin Pina, who works with the Haiti Action Network. Pina is also an independent journalist and documentary filmmaker who has been based in Port-au-Prince the past 5 years. Maybe we'll start with a couple of basic questions. Can you maybe talk about your work in Port-au-Prince as a journalist, as a filmmaker, and importantly, talk about some of the things that you have seen take place in Port-au-Prince since Aristide was removed from power almost 1 year ago?
Well, basically where the corporate media and what I call the mainstream media, where their frame of reference are their embassies. We're talking about U.S., Canada, and France. Or their frame of reference is the U.S. installed government. Our frame of reference are the urban and the rural poor. So we're really reporting about what's going on in their communities, which is, I guess, really nobody else is doing. So what that means is, unfortunately, what it means is that we sometimes are the only witnesses to a lot of the massacres that are occurring today, which are being done by the Haitian National Police, who the UN and specifically the RCMP are taking responsibility for training, but are washing their hands of any culpability or any responsibility for what the Haitian National Police are doing in the streets in those poor neighborhoods. We know that just a few weeks ago, a journalist, Abnias Jean, was brutally murdered by the Haitian National Police. He was in a neighborhood called Village des Deux. He witnessed the Haitian National Police go into that neighborhood, which is not uncommon, round up three young men between the ages of 14 and 16. The police summarily executed them. They then saw that Abnias Jean witnessed this event. They ran after him. They chased him into a restaurant. They broke down the door of the restaurant. They grabbed him. They beat him to a pulp, beat him bloody. Then they pumped three bullets into him and killed him. Right now, being a journalist and giving witness to those kinds of events that are going on in those poor neighborhoods against Lavalas, which is the majority political party of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who was forced out of the country February 29th, 2004. It's not easy to do. It can get pretty dangerous because, to be honest, the RCMP can take as much credit as they want for training the Haitian police, but the truth is the Haitian police are out of hand.
So let's focus a little bit on that context. You talked about Lavalas and Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who's now gone from the country. He was removed. Canadian troops were involved directly in that operation. As I understand, U.S. troops took Aristide, or kidnapped, as a lot of people within the Haitian community here in Montreal and throughout the world refer to as a kidnapping. But then it was also the Canadian police that were securing the airport to fly Aristide out of Haiti.
Well, let's be clear. It's not just the Haitian community who's saying that. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the Congressional Black Caucus, the 14 nations of CARICOM, the 50 nations of the African Union, Venezuela, and Cuba, none of whom recognize this current U.S.-installed government, all have serious questions about the way in which Jean-Bertrand Aristide was removed from office, removed from power. So it's not just the Haitian community or some fringe group. It is the majority, actually, of nations in the world who currently do not recognize the U.S.-installed government.
Well, let's talk about that government that's currently functioning in Haiti. Can you maybe give us some context and understanding to the people that are now ruling the country? What is their history? Where are they coming from? What is their connection to the United States and Canada and France?
Well, we know that the current U.S. installed Prime Minister, Gerard Latour, spent 26 years living in Boca Raton, Florida. I mean, this is a man who lives in a mansion. You know, his hot tub probably costs more than a lot of people's homes in Port-au-Prince and the poor neighborhoods. If you see this gentleman, you can tell that he's never gone a day without food in his life, yet he's now been put in charge of a population that is basically starving, one of the poorest populations in the world. They call them the so-called technocrats because somehow that's supposed to make us feel better about the fact that they weren't democratically elected, and somehow they're bringing some sort of special gift that will miraculously transform this poorest country in the Caribbean, being in one of the poorest countries in the world, into this new beginning, if you will. But unfortunately, what's really clear is people like Bernard Gousse, the so-called Minister of Justice, the former Minister of the Interior, who's now the Foreign Minister, Ehud Abraham, who was a former general in the army. These guys, they're dangerous. I mean, they've shown themselves to be dangerous. They've shown themselves willing to lie, to manipulate the truth in the name of democracy, because they have the backing of the Bush administration, and they have the backing of the Matin government, and they have the backing of the government of France. Those are the primary governments behind this. But also, you've got to realize that they now have used the UN Security Council to give legitimacy to the overthrow of a democratically elected leader in this hemisphere. And that's exactly why CARICOM has yet to recognize it, because you understand that it's a democratic principle. If CARICOM and if African nations, the 50 countries of the African Union, accept this coup, then what's going to stop the U.S. government and France and Canada from doing it to them? And they're very, very conscious of the democratic principle and the precedence that this will set if they do not demand a serious investigation into exactly what happened in the removal of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Why were there paramilitary forces that were allowed to arm and train in the Dominican Republic? Is somebody going to tell me that my government, with all of its intelligence networks, particularly during this so-called era of terrorism, did not know that those people were training and being armed in the Dominican government, did not know that a segment of the Dominican military were providing them protection and safe haven as they were crossing over the border into Haiti, attacking and killing Lavalas officials, and ultimately coming in and being used by the United States and Canada and France as a pretext for why Aristide had to leave? Because the rebels had come in and there was going to be bloodshed. Remember that line?
Well, let's talk about that lead up to when Aristide was taken out of Haiti. Can you talk about the months before that? The media here in Canada was covering this very heavily and it seems was giving a lot of voice to the anti-Aristide demonstrations. There was a huge focus on that, specifically within the Globe and Mail. There was very little said about Lavalas. I know that there was many demonstrations also demanding that Aristide stay his term as elected prime minister. So can you maybe give us some context to the months before, where perhaps to somebody looking at the situation from Montreal or from Canada, it seemed like a very chaotic situation?
It's true that from my perspective, reality was skewed. Reality was obscured, just as it still is being today, as I noticed by this woman, Marina Jimenez, in the Globe and Mail, an article that she wrote yesterday. The truth is exactly what you said. There were much larger demonstrations in the capital and in the larger cities of Haiti demanding that Aristide be allowed to fulfill his 5-year term in office. But what the international media, the mainstream media, the corporate media focused on were the smaller opposition demonstrations. Now, whenever someone in the opposition was provoked into violence, because there was provocation that was going on. But you've got to remember that this was a population, the majority of whom are poor, who believed that for the first time they had a government that represented their interests, that they had a voice in the political life of Haitian society. So they felt very much embattled. But there was a lot of provocation going on, trying to purposefully provoke them to violence, to then manipulate the media to show that these were the evil minions that were supporting the dictator Aristide. But what wasn't being said was the number of people in La Valas who were also, because the opposition, there were never killings, the level of which I saw against La Valas, even before Aristide was forced out. There were dozens who were killed, who were brutally murdered in drive-by shootings by unknown assailants in the streets of the poor neighborhoods leading up to Aristide's forced departure. None of this happened against the opposition, but yet a single hair on their head was touched. The international press would scream, international human rights organizations would scream, but they never, ever talked about the killings of La Valas militants in those poor neighborhoods at all. You never heard. It was a blackout of that information. Why? Because it didn't serve the purpose of portraying the reality that would ultimately justify the departure of Aristide. And I say that because there is a heavy, deep relationship between the corporate media and governments. Listen, if you're going to tell me that the largest TV stations in this country and the largest newspapers in this country, that their publishers don't have relationships with the Canadian government, I'm going to call you a liar, because I know it's got to be just like in my country. They can make a call. You understand? And again, it's a question of the frame of reference. If my frame of reference is what's important to me is access to my embassy to get information about the story of my government's role in any country, and what's important to me is to have access to the government that my government supports in power in that particular country, what am I going to do to keep that access? That access is important to me, and the only way that I can keep it is to give credence to their frame of reference in the way that they frame the story, as opposed to going into the streets and interviewing people myself and getting an independent view which may run contradictory to them. Well, look at the press in Iraq. My God, do you see all the kowtowing that's going on? I mean, people are praising everything that's going on in Iraq. You rarely see anything that's negative about... I mean, I don't know what the Canadian press is like, but in my country, it's a juggernaut. You know, the Bush administration is very... It is the role of governments to manipulate the media because they need to get their point of view across. That's what spin is about. And, of course... As I said, there are relationships between the corporate media and government that have naturally developed over time. And so it's naturally going to obscure the truth. And that's why independent voices are so important.
So as an independent journalist and you've used this term, has focused on the urban and rural poor, can you maybe give us your perspectives as somebody who has been focusing heavily on those neighborhoods, on those communities that people have traditionally supported Aristide in? So maybe give us your ideas on these neighborhoods, maybe describe the conditions of people's lives and why Aristide has such a support base in these neighborhoods.
Well, these people are dirt piss poor. You know, most of them are lucky if they can get enough money together to eat, particularly these days. Because you've got to remember that the business elite, the small oligarchy of Haiti has rewarded themselves for this coup for overthrowing Aristide. They've rolled back raising the minimum wage. You know, they're paying less money to their workers. At the same time, the price of rice and beans has risen, making it really difficult for those poorest families to be able to feed themselves. At the same time, you've got to remember that they're charging sales tax on everything that they're selling in Haiti. Yet, the U.S. installed government has said they're not going to collect sales taxes for 3 years. So they're putting that extra money in their pocket So the poor are only being starved and punished for their support of Aristide, while the wealthy elite are being allowed to enrich themselves further. That's the reality of this government on the ground. And what it means is that these families are it's going to be interesting to see the statistics that come out about infant mortality during this particular period. It's going to be interesting to see the statistics that come out about starvation and calorie counts in those communities, because right now it's under UN control, right? Right now it's under US control, Canadian control, French control, right? They're the ones who are calling the shots. But I would venture to say that right now malnutrition is at its greatest point in Haiti today because of the ousting of democracy February the 29th. And that you were asking me about this government earlier, right? An indication of the kinds of folks that these are is one of the first ministries that they abolished when they came into office was the Ministry of Literacy. I mean, imagine that. Mm. There was a program of universal literacy where every adult between 30 to 60 could attend a free literacy class and learn to read and write. The first thing these guys took out was this literacy program among the poor. I think it points to their priorities, but what it really means, and related back to this question that you asked me, is that these communities are being forced to suffer more. They're being punished for having elected a president and continuing to call for his return after he was forcibly removed from office.
Can we go back to the early 1990s to give a little bit of history and context to what we're seeing currently in Haiti? Aristide was, as I understand, forced out at a certain point in the early 1990s. He was then returned as chaos politically was taking place in the country, was returned in 1994. So can you maybe give us some context to what took place back then and how it relates to Aristide's ousting almost a year ago now?
Well, he was, of course, Aristide was a Catholic priest of the liberation theology ilk. What liberation theologists believe, that to walk in the footsteps of Jesus means to work on behalf of the poor, and if that means getting involved in politics to change social conditions, to uplift the conditions of the poor, so be it. He comes from that school within the Catholic Church in Latin America and the Caribbean, not just Haiti. He was catapulted into the presidency in 1990 in elections where he won by 67% of the vote, which is the highest plurality of any elected sitting president in the history of the hemisphere. He served 6 months in office, and then he was overthrown in a brutal military coup. There were 3 years of intense repression and exile. We know that the CIA created a death squad called FRAP, the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti, which terrorized and murdered thousands of Haitians to forestall his return. We know that the CIA accused him of being a madman, basically, having been institutionalized in a Canadian mental institution, that he was on lithium, that he was mentally unstable. Of course, all of that was debunked and shown to be clearly a false effort by the CIA to misportray who this man is. Then, in 1994, he was returned at the head of 20,000 U.S. troops. Now, of course, people like to present this as saying that this was an altruistic return, that the U.S. was interested in returning democracy to Haiti. Well, I was there, and I can tell you that what was going on is that the Haitian military had broken up into drug fiefdoms, right? It was fighting over the drug trade and eating itself alive. Well, the U.S., as in most of these countries, has a huge investment in that military. They actually created it in the first occupation, 1915. And so they have a huge investment in it. So they actually intervened to try to salvage the military as an institution. This was not about returning democracy. And we can see that clearly because when they returned Aristide, they did not disarm the military. They did not disarm the death squads. And actually what they did was they forced Aristide into compromises that was clearly meant to try to undo his popularity. So this whole thing that resulted in February 29th actually really began in 1994 when the United States returned him. And you've got to remember that Canada was all up in this as well. Canada was deeply involved in the process of structuring elections, in the electoral process in Haiti. So then you've got this weird period from 1994 on. René Préval succeeds him in 95. Aristide is elected again in 2000. And from there on, you've got this other strategy of USAID, of non-governmental organizations, where they begin to fund grassroots efforts, and only grassroots efforts that oppose Aristide, that are in opposition to Aristide, while they begin to systematically exclude any organization that is affiliated or in some way positive, supportive of the government. So you really see an undermining of the government through non-governmental organizations. Canada, again, is deeply involved in that, in funding non-governmental organizations that are building the opposition to Aristide, as well as France, the European Union, and the United States. All of this, of course, leading up to this period just before February 29th, where the so-called student movement begins to emerge, where there is a so-called attack against the National University, where they claim that the evil minions of Aristide attack the sanctity of the university. I think people who saw my film last night saw that there's a completely different version to that story than what was presented in the press and what was presented by the opposition, and particularly by Andy Appeared and the so-called Haiti Democracy Project in Washington, D.C., which has really been the public relations arm of the opposition to Aristide, and now is acting as public relations representatives for the U.S. installed government. So that's an overview of the history. But my point is that there is a whole side to this story and another way of viewing it that is not told in the mainstream media, that cannot be told in the mainstream media because it runs afoul of the official version of those governments who have a vested interest in supporting the overturning of democracy in Haiti.
Now, this past November here in Montreal, there was an international conference on Haiti. Prime Minister Paul Martin was there. La Torture was also there. Given that Canada obviously has played a very significant role in Aristide being removed from office, that conference in and of itself is a very clear example. Can you expand on that? From your view and experience on the ground, what type of role is Canada playing? The RCMP have a heavy presence in the country. And importantly, given this and given Canada's involvement, why do you feel it's important that people here in Montreal or throughout this country should stand up and take notice of what's taking place in Haiti currently?
Well, Canada, of course, I spoke earlier about the role of the RCMP in training the Haitian police. You see them all the time in the street with them. And these are the same Haitian police that are committing these massacres in the capital. You know, October the 26th, you know, they killed 12 young men in Fort Nacional. October the 28th, this brutal murder of five young men in Bel Air. I talked about the assassination of Abnias Jean. But there are countless other massacres, which I've documented, that the Haitian National Police are performing in these poor neighborhoods. And again, the RCMP are boasting about their role training these thugs and these murderers, yet they wash their hands of any responsibility for what they do in those neighborhoods. So we're clear about the role of the RCMP. A lot of people don't know is the role of Canada in the electoral process. Canada is one of the primary funders of the groups that are participating in the Conseil Electoral Provisoire, which is preparing for the Haitian elections, including the drafting of the electoral law that will be used for these next elections. And the electoral law that has come out is draconian. If you were to see, if you do not have a stamp that shows that you voted, you cannot apply for a national identity card. If you don't have a national identity card, you can't have a bank account. You understand? You have no way of being officially recognized by the state if you don't vote. That's mandatory voting. You understand? This is akin to those 1982 elections in El Salvador. I don't know if people remember, where you had to have the stamp, the cédula, in your ID card. And if you didn't, then you could be killed because people were going to check whether you voted or not. It's Canada that has been supporting that process, that has developed these draconian rules that are going to run that next set of elections. They're up to their neck in this process. The thing is that anybody, any Canadian, just as I feel any citizen of my country, the United States, who can see the clear role that our governments are playing in Haiti, must feel some sense of responsibility. I mean, after all, if we call ourselves democracies, doesn't that mean that our citizens are supposed to be educated about what our governments are doing with our money abroad in our names? Doesn't that mean that whatever the outcome of that is, that we are de facto complicit in it? And doesn't that mean that if we're going to call ourselves a democracy, that we have to involve ourselves in the process? Doesn't that mean that when we feel that our government is doing something that does not represent who we are as a people, does not represent our values as a people, that we must speak out loudly and we must condemn it? I believe so.
You have been listening to an interview with Kevin Pina of the Haiti Action Network. Pina is an independent journalist and documentary filmmaker who has been based in Port-au-Prince the past 5 years. This interview focused on the current conditions in Haiti, where 1 year ago, Haiti's democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was ousted from political office, forced by U.S. soldiers onto a military plane and into exile in South Africa. Aristide, last elected as president in 2000 as a leader of Lavalas, which means flash flood in Haitian Creole, became a symbol of the Lavalas political movement, which swept Jean-Bertrand Aristide to the presidency first in 1990, with the support of approximately 80% of Haitians who live below the poverty level. 1 year after the elected Lavalas government was replaced with a U.S., Canadian, French-appointed government, there are increasingly brutal human rights reports which outline a systemic war waged against political dissidents fighting for Haitian self-determination and against the U.S., Canadian, and French-appointed government. For more information, visit HaitiAction.net. That's www.haitiaction.net. This interview was recorded and produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe.